just send them around.
Okay, let me tell you what these are. This is a surprise that I've been holding off until we have covered enough ground for this to make any sense to you. But one year, many years ago, when I first put this material together in a course, I put together a one-page summary sheet of each unit that we have looked at. The idea is that it makes it easier to review and to kind of summarize and go over, and hopefully additionally help those who join us along the way. So this is up to date. You'll see that it's divided by units, and it pretty much covers everything we've done, at least the main points, through the first half of Chapter 7, which was the last section that we got to before this evening. I'm not going to go over it with you. That would take a shiur into itself. But you have it, you can file it, you can keep it, you can throw it in the garbage, you can do with it as you wish. It's up to you. It is essentially an ongoing summary of everything we have done. You will get the rest of it as well. I have it on the whole Sefer, so as we go through it, you'll add to this collection as well. So that's number one. Number two, I believe that I left you with a question. And that's the question we're going to start off with today. Where are we? We left off at the end of Chapter 7. Starting with Pasuk Chaf Gimel, chapter 7, verse 23. Everybody have it? Mm-hmm. In the last episode, at the beginning of chapter 7, we encountered an individual we identified as the Chacham. The Chacham, because he talks about Chochmah. Chochmah being wisdom, Chochmah being philosophy, Chochmah as yet undefined in the context of Sefer Kohelet, but for our purposes, we've used the word Chacham in the global sense that we are familiar with it. Individual who embraces a philosophy or a way of life that tries to analyze the world and tries to understand it. The philosopher, the thinker, the wise man, if you will. We will momentarily see whether or not we can compare the Chacham of Kohelet to the Chacham of the Pesach Seder. We'll see very quickly that that is not the case. Philosophy of the Chacham was essentially a philosophy of resignation to the challenges or the problems that the world has. In other words, underlining the world view of the Chacham is the idea that we can't change the world. We can't really make a difference in the world. Our purpose is to understand the world intellectually, not necessarily to influence or change the world. We can't do it even if we wanted to. And that philosophy of resignation he then threw at each of his partners in the process. The Nehenah, who refused to acknowledge the existence of death. It forces him to look at death to understand that death is real. By the attendants at the Beit Afel, to the Amal, who's constantly trying to perfect the world. He insists that the Amal learn a little bit of patience and a little bit of lower the expectations and the rhetoric, learn a little humility, not to be so angry. And to the Yirei Elokim, he says, a life attempting or addressing an effort to embrace only righteousness is essentially a life that is going to self-destruct or at least be futile. Life is filled with righteousness and wickedness combined, and that's the ideology he embraces. It's essentially a philosophy of resignation on all fronts. Accept the world with all its flaws as it is, and take a step back, try to analyze and understand it not change it or address it. And that brought us to verse 23. Kol zo nisiti b'chokhma, amarti echkama v'hi rechoka mimeni. All of this I tried through wisdom. I thought I could become wise, but he rechoka mimeni. But wisdom, this type of wisdom, this philosophy, this notion of amarti echkama, I will become wise, rechoka mimeni. Rechoka mimeni means it is far from me. It has escaped me. It is beyond my either beyond my reach or it has moved beyond my domain. Rachok ma shehaya v'amok amok mi yimtzeenu. Deep, far away. I want to translate these verses carefully because we're going to need the phraseology. Amok, amok, rachok ma shehaya, that which is far off. V'amok, amok, and that which is deep, deep. Mi yimtzeenu, who can find it? Saboti ani v'libi, I turned around my mind, in my heart, lata'at v'latur, uvakesh chokhma v'cheshbon, to know, to search, to seek out wisdom and reason, v'ladat resha kesel, v'yasichlut v'holelut, to know the wickedness of folly and foolishness. I made it my agenda in life. I sought out wisdom and understanding and reason to try to understand the human condition. Umotzeani mar mimavet et ha'isha. Asherim mitzodim b'charamim liba, asurim yadeha. And I found more bitter than death is woman, whose heart is snares and nets, her hands are fetters. Liftov lifneha elokim mimalet mimena, he who pleases God shall escape from her, v'chote yilached ba, and the sinner shall be caught by her. Her hands are snares. She's a trap. So the one who merits to be good before God will escape her trap. The one who sins will be snared and caught by her. Ve'eize matzati amra Kohelet. Behold, this I found, says Kohelet. Achat la'achat limtzo cheshbon, counting one upon thing upon another to find the sum. Asha'od biksha nafshi, v'lo matzati. My soul seeks, but I have not found it. Adam echad me'elef matzati. One man amongst a thousand I have found. V'isha b'chol eile lo matzati. But amongst a thousand I have not found one woman. Presumably one worthy woman. Levad re'eze matzati. Only this I have found. Asher asah ha'elokim et ha'adam yashar, v'hema bikshu chishbonot rabim. I have found that God has made man upright, but it is man that has sought the many inventions, calculations, crookedness, as you wish. The next verse begins, Mika Chacham, who is like the wise man, and I'm going to assume for the moment that is back to our Chacham. So who is the author of this passage? One thing is clear, whoever is the author has rejected the philosophy of the Chacham. Not by argument, but by... He hasn't offered counter-arguments to the Chacham, but he has...
exception?
He's rejected it outright. Kol zon nisiti b'chokhma, amarti echkama, v'hi rechoka mimeni. All of this I attempted in wisdom. I thought I could become wise, but I found that it was a mistake. All of this is ridiculous. This is not wisdom. This is not acceptable. This is something which I completely and totally reject, without necessarily explaining in this passage the reason for his objection. We haven't gotten there yet, but he certainly has pushed away the Chacham, or pushed away Chochmah as a concept. Amarti ech kama v'hi v'chakam imeni. I sought to embrace wisdom, to become wise, but it's too far away. It's too distant. It's too impossible. Amok, amok, rachok, far, deep. This is not possible, not capable.
What if it was just too far for him? We say, until Einstein came along, people didn't understand relativity. Einstein comes along, everybody understands relativity. You know what I'm saying?
It wouldn't change the book. It wouldn't change the book. I mean, if you want to rewrite the wisdom of Kohelet and say, okay, I know better, that's fine. But for Kohelet, it doesn't make a difference whether it's too far for him or too far in principle. It essentially comes to the same thing. From his perspective, this is not a philosophy of wisdom he's prepared to embrace or accept.
Right? Is he going to explain why?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
All right. We'll get there. We're going to break it down in pieces. We'll get to the fate of women worse than death in a moment. Right, but that
must be the Urayah of him.
Well,
because he's the only one left who's going to say, yeah.
Amal has written himself out of the equation. So it's either the Urayah Elohim or the
Nehenet.
But there's nothing in this passage that speaks to anything remotely in the world view of the Nehenet, which leaves us, by process of elimination, only the Yirei Elokim. That having been said, poses for us a somewhat more difficult challenge, which is, assuming it is the Yirei Elokim,
what's he got against women?
What does he have against women? Especially considering the fact that the author of this passage is Shlomo HaMelech, who's not a stranger to the issue of relationships with women and the challenges and blessings that brings. The centerpiece of this passage is clearly his diatribe against women. He went seeking wisdom, and he found in all of his searches, his conclusion is that woman is a fate worse than death. Before we even attempt to address that question, and I expected a house full of women this week, given the fact that we put this on the equation, but okay, you'll have to be the spokespeople for this issue. Before we address the attitude towards women per se, the verse itself seems to present to us a non sequitur. What's the basic context of this passage? What's he looking for? What's he addressing? The opening verses are a rejection of the wisdom of the Chacham, the philosophy of the Chacham. And then he says, so I turned my attention, saboti ani v'libi, ladat, latur, vakesh chokhma, to seek, to understand, to try to understand it in my own terms, or to embrace it myself, ladat, resha keso, to understand folly and wisdom, to put it all together. And what was his final conclusion? His final conclusion has something to do with marriage and women? It's like, what? It's the ultimate non sequitur. Where has that become the subject of discussion in this entire first seven chapters? He hasn't spoken about marriage once. The fundamental theme of Sefer Kohelet, as we have seen over and over again, are two. Namely,
death
and
injustice.
Broader. Two fundamental themes of Kohelet from the very beginning. One is life and death, or the meaning of life in the shadow of death, and the other is Eizeh Tov. Yaseh Adam, the definition of good and evil. Those are the two fundamental themes. To bring it down into the issue of marriage and women and the challenges that poses is to narrow the focus of his discussion significantly. Forget the issue of whether he's pro-women or against women or whether this is sexist or not. Forget the substance of the issue for a moment. The context of this verse makes no sense. In the context of Kohelet, he's looking for the broadest possible terms of understanding of the world, life and death, good and evil, rejects the attitude of the Chacham, embraces a search for meaning, and comes to the conclusion that women is or are a fate worse than death.
Unless he's blaming everything on Chava, because that's life and death, and
possibly
with the Eitz Hadas.
I agree. We're fishing. Because it's remarkably difficult in context. Forget the philosophical statement about women. It the context of this verse.
Betsy, you left your gun in the car, right? This is a gun-free environment.
It's a remarkably difficult verse.
It's difficult maybe from our perspective.
No.
We have giving women more credit than maybe back in the time this was written, where women may have been equated with the opposite of Chochmah. So if women are equated with the opposite of Chochmah, then it's perfectly appropriate. Once he rejects Chochmah, he starts with silliness, and then he could easily fall into that because that's his context.
His context is life and death and good and evil, in the broadest sense of the term. Righteous who suffer, the purpose, the meaning of life. Where is he going to go with that? Where is he going to go with, and his conclusion is that women is a fate worse than death. Is he going to go into a diatribe against marriage? He's going to say we should go, everybody should become celibate. Where is he going to go with it? He goes nowhere. But he goes nowhere with it. It's this single, isolated moment jibe at women. And in the entire rest of Kohelet, he'll never come back to it. Nor does he have it, has he ever addressed it in the past. It's this. It's the biggest non sequitur in the Sefer. And it begs the question, forget the philosophical issue or the sociological issue, it begs the question, what is it doing in this passage? I want to put it into that context first, because what I want to try to do to address it, without sounding apologetic, I want you to I want to see the challenge that the text per pshat poses if we take this verse literally. Before we attempt to address it on some other level, we have to understand that in its literal context, it poses more challenges for us in the pshat of the perek and of the sefer than it could possibly resolve. There was a question. Somebody had a question. Alan? No? I'm going to add one dimension to the challenge. Yes?
I think it's Yireh Elohim who's speaking.
It's Yireh Elohim. I agree it's Yireh Elohim. By process of elimination, I have no choice but to assume it's Yireh Elohim.
Do
you understand how problematic that is?
Well, here's a weird suggestion.
Okay, I'm listening.
But it's almost a concept of celibacy.
Okay. I'm not prepared to go there so fast, but all right. Shlomo HaMelech, remember, at the end of the day. Okay, you have to remember who we're dealing with.
Yes, but I mean, this is not necessarily him as an individual speaking.
No, Shlomo speaks. This Sefer is Shlomo. He's not speaking on behalf of anybody, and he owes no allegiance to anybody. Melech Yisrael, this is Shlomo. And whatever we say about it has to fit Shlomo. And given the fact that Shlomo is married to 300 wives and 700 concubines, maybe that's why he says what he says. Who knows? But it doesn't work in the pshat. So even if I want to take it out of the context of its pshat and say it has some, he's for some reason anti-women because of his own personal experiences per se, let's assume, it still doesn't help me understand the sefer. And if my goal is to understand the text, whatever interpretation we give has to match and fit back into the context of the parak. I'm going to add a level of complexity to the question. If we talk about Shlomo HaMelech, any attempt to suggest that Shlomo himself wrote this because he has in his own life experiences some kind of subtle, subliminal, or maybe not so subtle, animosity towards or negative attitude towards women as a whole, has to be able to reconcile the glaring contrast between his statement about women here with his statement about women elsewhere. Shlomo HaMelech is not an author, is not the author of only one book. Shir HaShirim is one piece of it, and Shir HaShirim is a much broader issue of the metaphor, the relationship between man and woman, and what it means. But let's take a much narrower focus in a verse from Mishlei, in which Shlomo HaMelech writes, in contrast to Motseh ani mar mavet et ha'isha kohelet. We have a verse in Shir HaShirim in Mishlei, which reads, Matzah Isha Matzah Tov. He who finds woman finds good, or finds a woman finds good. V'yafek Ratzon Hashem, and achieves the desire, the will of God. So there is clearly a different view being put forward by the same author between Kohelet and Mishlei. Or another verse from Mishlei, which one cannot ignore in this context.
Eshet Chayim.
Eshet Chayim. Oh, it's much more, it's much broader than Eshet. Oh, not at all. Not at all. We will study Eshet Chayil in depth. In depth. Eshet Chayil is the classic superwoman. If you read it carefully, Eshet Chayil poses a serious problem for us because it presents the woman as the housekeeper, the breadwinner, and the Torah scholar in one personality. Now we read Eshet Chayil carefully. And it's a problem is to identify exactly who Eshet Chayil is referring to, because in the classic normal structure of society, there's always a division of those responsibilities. However you divide them up, but there's always a division of those responsibilities. No healthy relationship would ever place all three of those responsibilities on one shoulder and not the other. You would have an imbalance in the relationship. So it's as a parak by in and of itself, forgetting our study of Sefer Kohelet, it's a problematic parak which has to be addressed. Please God, someday soon we'll study Megillat Ruth. That's really the place to look at Eshet Chayil as a parak of study. Who's the only, completely aside and unrelated to Kohelet, who is the only other woman in Tanakh referred to as Eshet Chayil? Ruth. V'yodea koshar ami ki Eshet Chayil at. And for the record, she is the housekeeper, the breadwinner, and the scholar in her family. She's also a widow. Just a different way of looking at Eshet Chayil, a very problematic parak. But it's much broader and much more complex than that. We'll come back to it in a moment. But Eshet Chayil mi yimtza is the end of Mishlei. Actually the last parak of Mishlei. So however we address the question of Shlomo's attitude towards women, we have to find some reconciliation between his approach in Sefer Mishlei to his approach in Sefer Kohelet. Now in Mishlei he speaks about women a lot. I've only given you two verses. In Mishlei he speaks about women at length. In Kohelet, he has one verse. And it is the only verse.
Which was written before?
Oh, that's a machloket rishonim. You could make the argument that Mishlei is written earlier. It sounds like it's written earlier. Kohelet sounds like he's addressing the end of his life. Mishlei sounds like he's addressing his children at a much younger age. And you could therefore say, reasonably as many do, that we have a transition between his experiences in the middle of his life versus his experiences at the end of his life. That's a possibility. Another approach is the approach taken in the Medrash, or at least one Midrashic source. And that's the Medrash you have on the source page in front of you. Umotzeh anima mimavet, Medrash Tanchuma, says, Im zacha adam, if a person is worthy, matza isha matza tov. Ve'im lav, and if he's unworthy, umotzeh, there should be an olive there, umotzeh animar mimavet et ha'isha. In other words, according to the Medrash Tanchuma, the resolution of these two verses or the contradiction between them is to assume the difference is
different men.
Meaning, kishihi tova, if a woman is a good woman, a good wife, the relationship is a healthy one, eshet chayel miyimtza. Whereas kishihi ra'ah, if she is a bad woman or a bad wife, umetzeh nima mimavet. In that context, the difference is a different woman. In other words, I can resolve the contradiction in one either way. I can either associate the contradiction based on the fact that the man is deserving or undeserving. A more deserving man will find a wife who will be a matza isha matza tov kind of complement to him. An undeserving man will find a woman to complement his undeservingness. Or, the other way around, that the fault lies not with the man, but with the woman. And some resolution or some compromise somewhere in the middle is probably correct. The Medrash goes on to give an example. Tov lifnei Elokim yimalet mimena ze Yosef, v'chotei yelachet ba ze Zimri. A one who is good before God will escape her snares, referring to the story of Yosef, who escaped the snare of Eshet Potiphar, and the sinner will get trapped by her, is the story of Zimri, the prince of Shevet Shimon, who was seduced by Cosby Bat Tzur, from the daughters of Midian. Two examples of the contrast. All three of these resolutions, all three of these approaches essentially argue that these two verses are to be taken quite literally, and to find the resolution in terms of context of life, more deserving, less deserving. It's two possible scenarios of what a marriage could look like, or what a relationship between man and woman could look like. It can look like matza isha matza tov. It can look like motza nimar mimavet et ha'isha. It depends on him and on her. The truth is, if I made that statement in and of itself in a vacuum, we could all go home and say, fine, it's a very nice medrash. It makes a lot of sense. It's reasonable. It's not particularly offensive to anybody, assuming that you take it in the context that it was meant to be said, which is not to be offensive to any particular group, one or the other, and you have a simple resolution to these two contradictions. It has given way to a very famous joke, half joke, comment in the world, which is when two people get engaged, matzah or motzah. You ever hear the code?
Fine.
Right? Was it matzah or motzeh? Meaning, is the shidduch one of matzah isha matzah tov, or motzeh anima mima vetet isha? Is it a matzah or motzeh? You understand? All of this half tongue in cheek and half facetious, but it doesn't help me because it doesn't help me resolve Kohelet. It's an interesting irony that the Medrash, or the Midrashic approach to this verse, is the one that takes the verse quite literally. But the pshat of this verse can't take this verse literally, because a literal interpretation of this verse won't help me understand the parak. That's the irony of this verse. That if I understand it literally, I lose the pshat of the parak. And the Medrash dafka is the one that takes it literally and takes it out of context into a different domain altogether. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right.
If I leave it there, it says this is one and the same woman. Some days things are going great, and the next day you get killed.
Again, all of those very well be, and it works in the level of drash for that pasuk. Certainly, I think it's a drash or a sod. The midrashic interpretation of this verse, which compares it to Matzai Shem Matzah Tov and suggests that there's some kind of contrast in the marriage relationship, assumes the verse in Kohelet in context is talking about marriage, and that becomes, or is talking about women. And that for Kohelet is problematic because it makes no sense in context. I come back to that point. That's the key point here. Okay, last question before I want to go on.
What's that question I get? I think the problem with applying the two verses is, since in Kohelet he's trying to find an answer, if he really wanted the answer in terms of the literal translation of those pesukim, he would have included both of them, but he only has one. So what if since it's Yireyam Kim, what if the Isha is not really a woman, but it's things that divert you away from being God-fearing? So then you get ensnared into the bad life, and then you're going away from God.
So now we're you're attempting to look at it a little bit more philosophically or metaphorically, which is correct. But I want to. There's one piece of information I want to put on the table before we do that.
He's saying this as a direct answer to trying to find wisdom.
Correct. He rejects wisdom, and says, "I sought wisdom and I found woman as a fate worse than death."
And therefore, it cannot be a literal answer.
No, I agree. But I want to. We need to establish that in text, in context. Let's go one step further. Let's take a look at Eshet Chayil for a moment. Why Eshet Chayil? Because what I want to suggest to you is that Kohelet's attempt to address the reference to woman in Kohelet has to match Shlomo HaMelech's literature as a whole. And when Shlomo refers to women in general in his philosophical writings, to whom or to what is he referring? So I definitely want to start from Eshet Chayil. Now, Eshet Chayil, we're all familiar with the parak of the most part. Eshet Chayil is an interesting question. What is the parak referring to? So we, the superwoman, the housekeeper, whatever the terminology we want to use, whatever lines we want to draw, there's a fundamental machloket in the Mefarshim as to how to understand the whole parak. Source number two is Mitzudat David. I actually changed the letter here because I thought it was a misprint, but it's not. The first letter should be a chet, not a chet. Eshet Chayil kehatimo, with a hey. I think it comes from Lahatim, although it's missing the Aleph. It's not clear. Lesefer Musarei Imo, in the context of Kehatimo, in the end of his analysis of a book, which is a book of the lessons of his mother, Chazar Leshabeach Eshet Chayil Lechvod Imo Leman Hayot Lalezikaron. Shlomo chose to end the Sefer with an ode to his mother, in this case Batsheva, because most of the lessons in life he learned from her. That's a pshat of Eshet Chayil, which is in context, and looks at Eshet Chayil quite literally as an ode to a woman. Which woman, in the context of Shlomo's life, clearly not his wife, because his wife is Bat Paro, and Bat Paro doesn't qualify under any stretch of the imagination to this criteria, But the one in his life who did was his mother, was Batsheva. On the other hand, I want to show you two of the alternative interpretations, and I'll ask you a simple question, which is the Pshat and which is the Drash. Rashi, Eshet Chayil. Who and what is the Eshet Chayil, says Rashi? He, HaTorah. The Eshet Chayil is referring to Torah. Mi imtza, who will find her? Ashrei hazoche limtzaota. Happy is the one who is able to find Torah. Bir hagra, eshet hi haTorah. The woman in this perek is a reference to the Torah. V'nikret eshet chayil shehi niknet ayidei memchet dvarim hamefurashim v'mesechet avot. She's called eshet chayil because she is just like a woman. There is a kinyan in the marriage relationship. So too in Torah there is a kinyan. Torah has to be. There has to be a relationship entered into with Torah, much in the same way. Two interpretations, both Rashi and the Gra, who suggest that Eshet Chayil is a metaphor for the Torah. So I have two contrasting views. One position that says that Eshet Chayil is a description of the quintessential perfect Jewish woman. And another interpretation that says, no, Eshet Chayil is an entire chapter, is a metaphor. A metaphor for? For wisdom, for Torah. So not for wisdom, for Torah. Both of these sources, I'll come back to you in a second, both of these approaches have a source in the Medrash, and source number five, in the Psikta. Bo re'e kama tova isha, kama tova isha tova. Come look at how good a good woman is. Hakatuv kore ota metzia tova. Because matzah isha, matzah tov. Because she's a good find. Im b'isha mamash hakatuv medaber hare nikret tov. If we're talking about a woman, so she's called tov. And im b'torah hakatuv medaber, and if in fact the Torah is not talking about a woman at all, but matzah isha, matzah tov means a person who finds Torah, him shila hakatuv b'isha l'lamedcha shivcha shel isha tova. Then it's a compliment to women. It's a compliment if the woman is compared, if Torah is compared to a good woman. Because Torah is our most precious value. V'cheinu amer eshet chayil mi'imtza. So I have two very different interpretations of eshet chayil. One who sees it as an ode to the Jewish woman, and another that sees it as a metaphor for Torah. Simple question. Which is the closer to the pshat of the parak? You say the woman. Why?
The first line might be vague, but the entire text is very specific activity.
Okay. Any alternative suggestions? Now, Rashi is not necessarily swayed by Drash. Rashi has two choices before him. And you can take both the legitimate and the Medrash. One is to say that it's a reference to a woman or to women in general, and the other is a reference to the wisdom of Torah. Chose Dafka, the position of Torah. Why? So I would argue, or suggest to you, that while I think there is a level of pshat to be understood in Eshet Chayil literally, in the context of Sefer Mishle, I think Eshet Chayil is a metaphor. And absolutely a metaphor for Torah. And to prove that thesis, I want to take you through a journey of the opening nine chapters of Sefer Mishle. Because Eshet Chayil is the closing chapter of Sefer Mishle, and the suggestion I'm going to make to you is that Eshet Chayil closes Sefer Mishle on two levels. One level, if he's talking about his mother, so be it. One level is a simple literary level. But within the pshat of the parak, Eshet Chayil closes a circuit that he opens in the opening nine chapters of Sefer Mishle. And it's not possible to understand fully Shlomo Melech's use of woman as a metaphor without seeing the context of Sefer Mishle, because these books are essentially not only contemporary, but they come out of the same genre. Now, We're going to work off the text that you have with an English translation, but I'm also going to give you this text. This text is the first two chapters and chapters 7, 8, and 9, because there's a number of comparisons that are just easier for me to put them on the page and then to put them into a bold font so you can see which verses I am referring to. So take those. Has anybody ever studied Mishlei before? Well, that makes all of us. We're not going to go through all of Mishlei, and I'm not going to go through all the 9 chapters. My hope today is just to cover the basic structure of the opening section. But Mishlei, like Kohelet, and this is further proof of something we said in the very first class, Mishlei, like Kohelet, has two beginnings. It has an introduction, and then it has a body. The only difference is that in the case of Mishlei, the introduction is 9 chapters long. The whole book is 31 chapters long, so it's not quite so out of the ordinary. How do I know that we have a 9 chapter long introduction? So start from the beginning of the book. Perek Aleph, Pasuk Aleph. How does Mishlei begin? Mishlei Shlomo ben David Melech Yisrael. The parables, the lessons of Shlomo ben David, king of Israel. We'll get to what they are in a moment. Jump to chapter 10.
In Mishlei.
From here till the end of the shiur today, if not the end of, well, we'll see. Maybe we'll get back to Kohelet stuff. Beginning of chapter 10 begins Mishlei Shlomo. Mishlei Shlomo, ben Chacham Yisamachav, ben Ksil Dugat Imo, the rest of the metaphors and parables and statements of Shlomo, of Mishlei Shlomo. Those are the only two references to that phrase in the entire Sefer. Kohelet began exactly the same way. Tivrei Kohelet ben David Melech Yishalayim, and then in the middle of Perek Aleph, Ani Kohelet. Mishlei starts in the same way. Mishlei Shlomo, ben David, Melech Yisrael, and then at the beginning of chapter 10, Mishlei Shlomo. That's from a structural point of view an indication that something happens. This first 9 chapters start something, and then chapter 10 starts something anew. There is also a textual indication that the first 9 chapters are a unit. I'll show you as we go through that his theme with which he opens chapters 1 and 2 are the same themes with which he closes this unit, chapters 7, 8, and 9. So these opening 9 chapters, you're welcome to at leisure after this class, you're welcome to sit down with the Sefer Mishlei in Hebrew or in English and read through the whole 9 chapter unit. You'll see, we're going to do in Moshe Prakim, just in generalities, you'll see, actually bears out throughout the entire parak. Let's take a look at the first chapter. Mishlei Shlomo ben David Melech Yisrael. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. Ladat chokhma umusar lahavin imrei vina. To know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding. Lakachat musar haskel. To receive instruction of wisdom, tzedek u'mishpat u'misharim, justice, judgment, equity, latet liftayim orma, to give wisdom to the simple, lana'ar da'at u'mizima, to give to the young man knowledge and discretion, yishma chacham v'yosef lekach, let a wise man hear and increase learning, v'navon tachbulot yikne, and a man of understanding shall attain wise counsel. Lavin mashal umilitza divrei chachamim v'chidotam, to understand proverb and figure, words of the wise and their riddles. Yirat Hashem reshitat chokhma umusar avelim bazu. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, and fools despise wisdom and instruction. Shema b'ni, musar avicha. Ve'al titosh torat imecha. My son, hear my instructions of the father. Hear, do not forsake the Torah of your mother. They are a necklace around your head, chains around your neck. If sinners entice thee, do not consent. I'm going to skip a little bit and read quickly in the English because I want to get to the next paragraph. If the sinners say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood. Let us lurk for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them up alive like the grave. And whole like those who go down into the pit. We shall find all precious goods. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Throw in thy lot among us. We shall have one purse. My son, right? All of those, all of that is what the, who says? The sinners. Trying to entice my son. Right? The gangs, the influences of society that are negative. They talk about mugging and killing and the drugs and all kinds of terrible things. My son, bini al telech b'derech itam, do not walk in the way with them. Menar aglecham min tivatam, restrain your feet from their path. Kid aglehem larara yerutzu, their feet run to evil. They make haste to shed blood. V'yimharu lishpochtam. Kechinam mizara harashat. For no heed is taken of the net which is spread in the sight of any bird. They lie in wait for their own blood. We spoke about this once before, about the notion that ultimately there is a thread that runs through the works of philosophy in Tanakh that says that nature has its own rules, and ultimately a life of crime doesn't pay because it is ultimately self-destructive. Kein orchot kol botzea batza. Et nefesh ba'alav yikach. That is the way of everyone who is greedy of gain. It takes away the life of its owner. Now listen carefully to the next paragraph, because I think it sets up the key piece in this whole story. Chachmot, in contrast to the sinners and the ideology of the sinners, Chachmot bachutz tarona, barchovot titen kola. Wisdom cries aloud in the street. She utters her voice in the squares. Barosh homiot tikra. She cries in the chief place of concourse. Befitchei sha'arim. At the entrance of the gates. Ba'ir amareh tomer. In the city, her words are spoken. What are her words? Whose words?
Wisdom.
Her words are as follows. Ad matai ptaim te'ehavu peti v'leitzim. Sorry, ad matai ptaim te'ehavu peti v'leitzim latzon chamdu lahem. How long are you simple ones going to love being simple, and how long are you scorners going to delight in scorn? Uksilim yisnudat, and fools in the hatred of knowledge. Tashuvu letochachti, return to my reproof. Abia lachem ruchi, I will pour out my spirit to you. Odia dvarai etchem, I will make known to you my words. What are my words? My words are words of chachma. Yan karati vatimainu, because I have called and you have refused. Natiti yadi ve'en makshiv, I've stretched out my hand and no man regards them. She's complaining that she's there. She's, this wisdom is there for the plucking, there for the taking. And yet the fools ignore her. Vatifru kol atzati. They abandon all of my counsel. Vatochachti lo avitan. You would not want any of my reproof. Gamani be'etchem eschak. So I will laugh at your calamity. If you don't want to heed the wisdom, so when you self-destruct, I will stand there and I will laugh. El'ag bevo pachtechem, I will mock when your fear comes to you. Bevo kishua pachtechem, when your fear comes like a storm. Ve'edchem kisufa ye'eta, when your calamity comes like a tempest. Bevo alechem tzara v'tzuka, when distress and anguish come upon you. Az yikroni, then you'll call out to me. Ve'lo ene, and I won't be there to answer. Yishachranuni v'lo yimtzauni. They shall call me, but I shall not answer. Tachat kisanu da'at. V'irat Hashem lo bacharu. Because they seek, because they hated knowledge, and they chose not to fear God. Lo avu le'atzati, na'atzu kol tochachti. They wanted none of my counsel. They despised my reproof. V'yachlu mipri darkam. They ate of the fruit of their own way. U'mimo'atzatehem yizba'u. And they were filled of their own devices. Kimishuvat ta'im tahargem, for the turning away of the simple shall destroy them. Vishavat ksilim ta'abdem, the erring of fools shall self-destruct. Vishamea li yishkon betach, vishanan mipachad ra'a. But those who listen to me shall dwell safely and shall be at ease without fear of evil. What is the context of this parak? But the basic message and context. Who's speaking to whom? Chochmah is personified and is speaking to the fool and challenging the fool that he is being tempted by the sinners, who are also personified. And if they, and he has one opportunity now to heed her advice. She is on the street speaking out her voice, raising her voice, saying, come heed my words, which are linked, connected to Yirat Hashem. And the fool is the one who abandons those words and does not heed her call. Clear?
You're using English first person, and the Hebrew first person doesn't necessarily have to be.
So let's finish the ninth part of the book, and you'll see. There's no question that the parak personifies Chochmah as a woman in context of the story. But let's yeah.
In that context, one problem with what he said is a fool can never change his ways. When the bad comes to the fool, wisdom's laughing at him. So the fool's trying to fix the situation, but he can't get out of it. And
there's a lot to be discussed in Sefer Mishlei. We're just scraping. I want to see is the structure. The substance of Sefer Mishlei will take us way out of. I just want to see the context of what he's doing with this personification of wisdom. Jump to chapter 7. Jump to chapter 7, and I think, Nikki, your question will be resolved in chapter 7, 8, and 9. Now, this is the end of the same passage, or the same basic introduction. B'ni, Shmor Amarai, U'mitzvotai titzvon itach. My son, keep my words, lay up my commandments with you. If you keep my commandments, you will live. My Torah is the apple of your eye. Bind them upon your fingers, write them upon the tablets of your heart. Emor la chochma achoti at, umoda la bina tikra. You need to understand this verse for a moment. Answer your question?
Yeah, right there.
Maybe
at least in one passage.
Yeah, we'll see the whole
three prakim. I think it'll be
clear. Emor la chokhma achoti at umoda. Sorry. Umoda la binatikra. You see what I did? Say to Chochmah, you are my achot, my sister. And bina, moda la bina tikra. You will call bina tikra. Remember that Hebrew reverses subject predicate often. So you have to reverse the order. What is moda?
Knowledge.
Knowledge. But not in the context of this verse. In the context of this verse, what is knowledge? Chokhmah and Bina. What is Achoti and Moda? Achoti is a sister, in quotation marks, and Moda?
A friend.
You understand the phrase to know somebody in the biblical sense? Vayeda Adam et Chava Ishto? Moda is one's one's partner. Interesting phraseology. But it's intentional because of the pun on wisdom and knowledge. Right? Chachma, Bina, and Da'at. You have it in one phrase. But here, Moda is a reference to a conjugal partner. Let's talk about Achoti for a moment. Achoti means my sister. Now, how does that work? That's very strange, right? Yeah. Except, remember Shir HaShirim? How is the loved, how is the beloved referred to in Shir HaShirim? Over and over and over again? Achoti Kala. The word Achot, which today, which means sister, also has another meaning in Tanakh. It's very similar to a betrothed, a beloved, which actually gives a whole new meaning to the parsha of Avraham and Paro and Avimelech, when he says to Sarah, Imrina achoti at, and everybody translates that as say you're my sister, ostensibly because the understanding is that you're my sister, we're traveling through, you're not my wife. Right? Now, excuse me. He's 80 years old, and she's, right? Well, she's 10 years younger than him. She's his sister. What's wrong with this picture? And when Yitzchak tries it, and says, Achoti, she's my sister, and Paro gets very upset, Avimelech gets very upset because he opens up his windows and he sees he is mitzachekba. So he says, what did you do? You lied to me. I don't know. If he said she was my sister and Paro caught them in the act, lying would be the least of the problem. But it takes on a whole new meaning if you understand it as say that you are my betrothed, my achoti kala. Then it makes sense that they're traveling together. It also makes sense why that would protect her. Because in the ancient world, if the king chose to take the bride, there was nothing you could do to stop that. There's absolutely nothing you could do to prevent the king from taking a bride. The only issue was whether or not she was spoken for. And if she was spoken for, then you had to address the problem of the marriage. So what did you do?
You killed the husband.
You killed the husband. Familiar story to... Familiar to story to us from Dovin and Batsheva. Betrothed is not a legal action. Achoti kala is not a legal transaction. And therefore, you don't have to kill the husband.
You just take her.
So in a sense, by saying, say that you are my betrothed rather than you're my wife, he really was protecting his life because the alternative would have been, he can't stop the king from taking her if he wants, but if they are a legal marriage, then his life is forfeit. Which explains why he repeats the argument again, and why Yitzchak repeats the same thing. Because the Mefarshim say, if it's a failure, if the trick failed, so to speak, then why repeat it? But the answer is that the trick didn't fail, it worked perfectly all three times that it was meant to work, which is to preserve the life of the husband so that it can deal with the problem. That's Achoti Kala. That certainly in the context of Shir HaShirim, that's what the word means. And if that's what the word means here, then what Shlomo is saying is, when it comes to wisdom and understanding, there is a relationship with wisdom that goes beyond just acquiring knowledge. The Rambam actually talks about this at length where the Rambam talks about the process of acquiring knowledge as becoming identified, as becoming one with the knowledge.
Meaning God.
Excuse me?
Meaning God.
No, not referring to God. You and I, when we acquire knowledge, the knowledge becomes part of who we are. There is a union between us and the knowledge. The Rambam talks about the personification of knowledge. If you wanted to say the actual passage, it's source number 6 on the source page. We have three things: the man who possesses the power and is capable of comprehending, that power itself, namely the power of comprehension, and the object which presents itself as an object of comprehension and is capable of being comprehended. To use the foregoing example, the man, the heilig intellect, and the abstract form of the tree are three different things. They become one and the same thing when the intellect is in action. And you will never find the intellect different from the comprehensible object unless the power of comprehension, the power of being comprehended, is referring to. The issue, the last phrase I'm not going to get into, but the notion that the act of intellect, the act of acquiring knowledge, is a union between a person and the knowledge that they are acquiring. It has a sexual connotation. It's not an accident that the Torah uses the term knowledge when referring to the conjugal act. There is a certain parallel between the acquisition of knowledge and the union of a man and woman. And in the context here in chapter 7, he makes it very clear. Emor lachochma achoti at, umoda labinat tikra. You will say to wisdom, you are my sister, my betrothed, my beloved. And bina, understanding, you will call to, or you will refer to as your moda, as your partner. Why? And this is the key piece. Lishmorcha, this is to protect you. From whom? Me'isha zara, minochuya amareh hechalika. To protect you from the strange woman, whose words are hechlika, slippery. In other words, in these two verses, you have how many women?
Two.
You have chokhmah and binah, to which you will refer to as your achot, achotikala. And if you do, if you embrace wisdom, again, the metaphor of the woman, if you embrace her, then it will protect you from the alternative, which is the other kind of woman, namely the isha zara, the nochriya, who is amareh hechlik, who makes her words smooth. And now he begins to describe this process that he sees. Ki b'chalom beti ba'ad eshnabi nishkafti. For I looked out of my window, and I saw through my lattice. Ve'ereh b'pta'im. And I saw the simple ones. Again, the simple ones is always a reference to those who do not embrace the chokhmah that he is referring to. Avina. Avina babanim, na'ar chasalev. I saw, discerned, the youth, young man, void of understanding. Oved bashuk etzopina. He's passing through the street near the corner. B'derech beta yitzad. He's marching, he's walking through it by a house. B'neshef be'erev yom. In the twilight, in the evening. B'ishon laila v'afela, in the blackness, in the dark of night. B'inei isha likrato. And behold, there met him a woman. Shit zona unutsurat lev, with the attire of a harlot. And wily of heart. Homiyai v'soradat, she's noisy and ungovernable. B'veita lo yishkenur alea, her feet do not remain in her house. Remember that metaphor. This is very important for us in the next parak. The isha zona is described as somebody who is out on the street, whose feet can't, whose house can't contain her. She's constantly on the run. She has no anchor. Pam b'chutz, pam b'rchavot. Once outside, sometimes in the streets, it's a kolpinaterov, she lays in ambush at every street corner. Vechazikabo, and she grabs him. Vinashkabo, and she kisses him. Heazepanea, and she has a impudent face. Atomelo, and she says to him, Zivchei shlamim alai, I have had to sacrifice peace offerings this day. Hayom shilamti nedarai. Today I have paid my vows. I have no idea what that verse means. Al ken yetzati likratecha. Therefore I have come out to greet you. L'shacher panecha v'emtza'eka. To greet you diligently, to see your face. Mar vadim ravadati arsai. I have decked my bed with coverings. Hatuvot atum mitzrayim. Anyway, the rest of the seduction I'm not going to read. You can use your imagination. It's a description, very graphic terms, of this Isha Zona who seduces this fool and causes him to sin. Turn to the next parak. Hello? We can go back a few words. A few verses. V'atabanim shimuli v'akshivuli imefi. I'm reading from verse 24. I'm 7:24. I went back a few verses. Hearken to me now, my children. Attend to the words of my mouth. Al yesht el drachei libecha. Do not decline to her ways. Al teitabin tivateh. Do not go astray in her paths. Ki rabim chalalim hapila v'atzumim kol harugeah. For she casts down many wounded. Many a strong man has she slain. Darchei Sheol Beita. Her house is the way of the grave. Yordot El Chadri Mavet. Going down to the chamber of death. All of that describing whom? Isha Zara. Umotzeani Mar Mi Mavet Eta Isha. A woman whose fate is worse than death because it drags you down into the grave. Halo, chokhmatikra. Wisdom calls. Utfunatiten kola. And understanding puts forth her voice. Remember that verse in the beginning of chapter, in chapter 1? Same phrase. Berosh meromim ala derech, beit nitivot nitzava. She stands at the top of high places by the way where the paths meet. She cries out at the gates, at the entrance to the city, liad sharim lifikaret mavo ptachim tarona. The difference between the Isha Zona and the Isha Chachama, the Isha Zara is running through the streets, ambushing and lying in wait, whereas Chochma stands in one place, on the highest hilltops, the gates of the city, in very public places, and calls and beckons to you to come to her. She's not lying in wait trying to trap you. Alechem ishim ekra. She cries out, to you, O men, I call. V'koli el bnei adam. My voice is to the sons of man. Havinu p'taim orma. Simple, understand, prudence. You fools. Chsilim havinu lev. Understand this. Shimu kol negidim adaber umiftach sfatayim isharim. Rest of this, she again, same theme. She calls out, she says, I speak truth, come take my words. Take a look at verse 11. Ki tova chokhma mipninim. Pearls. Remember the phrase from Eshet Chayil? For wisdom is better than pearls. V'kol chapatzim lo yishvu va. Nothing can be compared to her. Eshet Chayil mi yimtza. V'rachok mipninim mikri. Ani chokhma shachanti orma. V'dat mizimot emtza. I, wisdom, dwell with prudence and find knowledge and discretion. Yirat Hashem snot ra, ge'av ga'on v'derech ra. Fear of Lord, the Lord is to hate evil, etc. Take a look at chapter 9. Chachmot banta v'ta. Wisdom built her own home. The personification is now clear. Wisdom has built her own home. In contrast to the Isha Zona, who barely has a home. All she has is really a bed. Because she spends most of her time wandering the streets. Amut Chatzva Modeh Shiva, she has hewn out her seven pillars. It's probably a reference to the seven disciplines of wisdom. Tavcha tivcha mascha yena, she's mingled her wine, she's slaughtered her beasts, meaning she's shechted the dinner. Shalchana arotea tikra, she has furnished, she has sent forth her maidens, al gabe mirome karet, etc., etc. Ten lachacham v'yechkam od. Take a look at verse 10. Tchilat chokma yirat Hashem v'dat k'toshim bina. The beginning of wisdom is the fear of Lord, of God.
Every day, first in the morning.
When I look at this from that context, look at verse 13. Eshet ksilut homiya, ptayut uva yedaba. Eshet ksilut, it's the woman of folly. She is simple. She knows nothing. Who is the woman of folly? The Isha Zara, the Nochriya, the Isha who is the harlot on the street. Eshet Ksilut. But you understand that chapters 1 through 9 create this metaphor. I'll explain what this metaphor means in a moment. And it ends with a reference to Eshet Ksilut. Now jump from there to chapter 31 and close the Sefer with a reference to Eshet Chayim. So there is a level of Pshat and Eshet Chayim that is certainly a reference to the context of the Jewish home, but actually I think in the context of Sefer Mishle, the interpretation of the chapter that is actually closer to the Pshat is the understanding that Mishle uses the woman as a metaphor for wisdom. Now, Mishle goes one step further. Using woman as a metaphor for wisdom is not unique to Sefer Mishle. It's a literary tool that is common in many of works of philosophy contemporary age. What is unique to Sefer Mishle is the distinction between two types of women. For a lack of a better term, I'm going to call them the Isha Zara or, to use Mishle's terminology, the Isha Zara or the Nochriya, in contrast to, who is the second woman? Chachma. Right? We'll call it Isha Kshera. To keep the parallel, Chochma. Now what's the difference? They're both Chochma. They're both wisdom. They're both a form of knowledge. Eshet Ksilut. The woman who represents folly. What's the difference between them? Let's go one step further. One's false wisdom, one's good wisdom, that's true. Isha Zara is very closely related to Now, what does the term remind me of? Right? Avodah Zara. Or Chochmah, or let's put it this way. Chochmazara, strange wisdom, foreign wisdom, in contrast to kosher wisdom. What are we talking about? The answer is very simple. Mishle introduces a concept into the vocabulary that is unique. It is a series of verses that have no precedent elsewhere. And they run like as follows. Started with chapter 1, Pasuk Zayin. Yirat Hashem Reshit Da'at Chochma Umusa. Fear of God is the beginning of knowledge and wisdom. Verse 29, same chapter. Tachat Kisanu Da'at V'Yirat Hashem. The sinners despise knowledge and fear of God. Chapter 2, verse 6. Ki Hashem yiten chokhma mipiv. Is it chokhma? Mipiv da'at utvuna. God gives wisdom and understanding. chapter 9, verse 10. Tchilat Chochma Yirat Hashem. Vedat Ktoshim Bina. In the terminology of Mishlei, and unique to Mishlei, is the notion that there is a distinction between two types of wisdom. Kosher wisdom and false wisdom. And in the metaphor of the woman, using woman as a metaphor for wisdom, if I have two types of wisdom, then I have two types of women. The Isha Zara, the Nochriya, the harlot on the street, of whom it is easily said, right, whose hands are snares and traps, because that's exactly what Mishlei describes. In contrast to the woman who is anchored in the bayit, not in the sociological sense of being anchored in the home, but in the philosophical sense, that her wisdom is anchored. It's not what a free-for-all. Wisdom that is not free for the taking, anybody can say anything they want and call it wisdom and philosophy. The wisdom of the Isha's Kshera is a wisdom that is predicated on and founded on Yirat Hashem. Yirat Hashem is the first step. The Masoret of Shema Bani Mishlei begins with a declaration, Shema Bani Musar Avicha V'al Titosh Torat Imecha. That wisdom comes from a Masoret. It comes from a tradition. It's not your personal observations on life and whatever conclusions you come to. We are finite beings and we can come to good conclusions, we can come to false conclusions. Wisdom, Chochmah, that is based on our own personal observations of life is a wisdom that is not anchored. It's out on the street. And in the words of Mishlei, that's the Isha Zara. That's the Isha Nochriya. That's Chochmah for anybody's taking. And it's a Chochmah that can lead you to the pit of the grave. The Chochmah of Sefer Mishlei is Torat Avicha Imecha Musar Avicha. The Chochmah of Sefer Mishlei is the Torah's Leviat Chen, is how the whole Sefer begins with the notion of Masoret of the Torah, of Yirat Hashem, of Chochmah. If I put myself back into the words of Kohelet, Kol Zon Nisiti B'Chochmah, this I tried in my wisdom and understanding, I made it my business to try to understand the world, and you know what I concluded? Motzeh Nimar Mimavet Ataisha. Such a wisdom with such a woman that is unanchored in the world of Torah and Yirat Shamayim and Yirat Hashem, Reshit Chochma Yirat Hashem, such wisdom is the snare of the Isha Nechuya. And is a fate worse than death, and he said it in Mishlei. And I don't think that Shlomo has transitioned philosophically and ideologically from Mishlei to Kohelet. On the contrary, I think his perspective is very consistent. But he's assuming that we are familiar with a metaphor that he's already presented to us at length as the substantive metaphor upon which all of Sefer Mishlei is built.
Yeah. So, back to Kohelet, when he does this digression and he goes into this woman, the snare, he basically tells, this is the false wisdom.
Correct.
Okay. But before that and after that, he picks up back with wisdom, and now he's not talking about that wisdom anymore. He's talking about the wisdom now, but not using the reference to the woman, but it's the wisdom that Yiras Hashem.
Let's go back. I'll work through the verses with you next week. But let's just briefly go back to those verses for a moment. He starts with Kol Zon Nisiti B'Chochma. It's referring to the Chacham. At the core of the Chacham's philosophy is the notion of, I saw it all, I experienced it all, here are my conclusions.
I can't do anything about it.
Right? Whatever his conclusions are. Okay. But that's the difference. The Yirei Elokim does not address the conclusions of the Chacham. What's he addressing? He hasn't addressed a single argument of the Chacham. He's done something far more profound. He's pulled the carpet out from under his feet. He's addressed the methodology of the Chacham. The methodology of the Chacham was to analyze the world and draw his conclusions. And the Yirei Elokim says to him, if you draw your own conclusions, I don't care what those conclusions are. But if you look at the world and draw your own conclusions, you have fallen to the into the snare and the trap of the Isha Nochriya.
Instead, gracious
Chochmah. Reshit Chochmah Yirat Hashem means that the only Chochmah you can embrace is the one that is founded on the foundation of Yirat Hashem. And on the Masoret of Shema Bani Musar Avicha V'Altitosh Tevat Emech. You have to start from that foundation. Then you can embrace the world. Then you can try to analyze the world. But if you don't start from the foundation of accepting the principles of Yirat Elokim, then you have fallen into the trap of the Isha Nechriya instead of the Isha Chachamah. That's the metaphor of Mishlei, which I think he draws on here. Because remember, the Yirat Elokim is the author of Mishlei. Of the four personalities of Kohelet, the only one who matches the personality of Mishlei is the Yirei Elokim. So it's not surprising, in the least, for the Yirei Elokim to suddenly draw on an analogy or a metaphor that was so prominent in his words of Mishlei. He basically says, that you call that wisdom? Remember Mishlei? I call that the harlot on the street. That's what's going on. We still have to work it through the parak. There's a number of issues here that I want to address still in terms of understanding the parak, but I'm going to stop here because we've run out of time. But Sof Hashem, we'll pick up here next week, and then we'll walk it through the parak itself.